be sure that I said hello to everybody, and this fine couple I didn't get to. How y'all doing? Great to see you. Yeah, happy holidays to you. Well, if you got to get something done in November, you better hurry up. You don't have much time, do we? Hope you had a good holiday weekend. And from the traffic out there this morning, I think a lot of folks did. Yeah, we're going to go back on 11. Hope we can make it okay on 11. But this morning, well, as we were coming, I told Jackie as we came up Christiansburg Mountain, I said, as far as I can look in my rear mirror's headlights. I mean, it was just, you know, they're already out there. So I made the mistake of going out to Walmart yesterday. I always have a principle over the decades of staying home on the Black Friday weekend, right? But I had to get a prescription. I cut my hand, field dressing a deer, so they wanted to give me an antibiotic. So I had to go to Walmart. And I never been to Walmart on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, but I'm going to tell you, I'll never go again. I mean, you needed a traffic cop for the baskets, you know? You came to, and they were all jammed in behind the clothes, and you didn't know where you were going to a basket. So anyway, that's the holiday season. We're here, and I'm thankful we made a safe trip. Oh, y'all, I'm glad you all had a good holiday. Jackie and Stephanie fixed us a wild turkey Thanksgiving dinner, and it was delicious. So we're thankful for my traveling fan club is here. My Pulaski fan club is here, but my traveling fan club also came this morning. So we're glad to be here. It's always a pleasure. Been thinking about this for quite some time. Always a pleasure being with you people, and we love you and we appreciate you. Every one of you, okay? I want you to know that we really appreciate you. Now today, for our Bible study, I'm going to do a little lesson here entitled, Spiritually Looking Back Over Our Shoulder. Okay? Spiritually looking back over our shoulder. Now to get us thinking about this, I try hard, as most of you know, to get you thinking with me. Okay? And now, so this 45 minutes, 30 minutes, we want to look back. The idea, the thought of looking back over our shoulder spiritually. And to do that, I'm going to give an example, first out of the Bible, and then we're going to go to the Bible, of somebody looking over their shoulder. On May the 6th, 1954, Roger Bannister, who was a British middle distance runner, became the first man in history to run a mile in less than 4 minutes. Some of us remember that. But within 2 months, a man, John Landy, who was a famous Australian middle distance runner, he bested Roger Bannister's time by 1.4 seconds. That was just 2 months later. Well, then, a couple more months later, on August the 7th of that year, 1954, at the British Commonwealth Games in Vancouver, Canada, these two men had a rematch of running the mile. There's an iconic photo of John Landy looking back over his shoulder as Roger Bannister passed him in the final stretch. When John Landy was interviewed and asked about that glance back over his shoulder at Roger Bannister, as Roger Bannister passed him, he looked back. He said, they asked him about it. What? He said, well, when Lot's wife looked back, she turned to salt. When I looked back, I became bronze. Didn't get the gold medal. So that glance back really did cost him. Now, this morning, we will take a look at our Bibles. And let's look at someone who looked over his back for a long time. I don't know exactly how long, because the Bible doesn't tell us, but it had to be in the range of 10 to 15 years. Spiritually, looking back over, let's turn to 2 Samuel, please. 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 1. Excuse me, I said 3. I told you wrong. I read it wrong. 2 Samuel 31. Sorry about that. 2 Samuel 31. Now what I'm going to do by looking at 2 Samuel 31, we're going to try to set the stage, okay? I'm going to give you some background here so you'll appreciate what's going on. All right, 2 Samuel.
31.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited about being with y'all people that I'm getting my own notes wrong here. Y'all have to bear with me. We're going to get to 2 Samuel 31, but not right now. I'm going to get it right in a minute. Just bear with me. 2 Samuel chapter 3. I said it right the first time. 2 Samuel 3 and verse 1, please. I'll get it right. Stay with me. 2 Samuel 3 and verse 1. Yeah. This Pulaski excitement's got the best of me. I sure am glad to be here with you folks, I tell you. I really am. All right. Let's find out what's going on. 2 Samuel 3:1. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. Okay? Now we continue in 2 Samuel chapter 3. Let's look at verse 17 and 18. 2 Samuel 3, 17 and 18. And Abner communicated with the elders of Israel, saying, "Ye sought for David in times past to be king over you." Verse 18. "Now then do it, for the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people, Israel, out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the hand of all their enemies." Okay. So we got a war going on. A war going on between Saul and David. And what was David doing then in the process of this war? To set the stage, we'll go to 2 Samuel 31. 2 Samuel 31, verses 2 and 6. 2 Samuel 31, I'm going to get my, if I can get my, these pages are so thin, you bear with me. 2 Samuel 31, no, I'm still, it's 1 Samuel, thank you very much. 1 Samuel 31, I hope I do better on the sermon than I'm doing here. 1 Samuel 31, let's look at verse 2. 1 Samuel 31, verse 2. I've been talking about that for 5 minutes. Maybe I finally get there. Oh, here we are. 31, verse 2 says, "And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his son. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons." Now, look at verse 6 of that chapter, 2 Samuel 31, 6. "So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together." Now, I want you to notice the word "all" in that verse, please. Okay? "And his armor bearer," and how many of his men? All of his men. Okay, now this is the kind of warfare that's going on now between David and Saul. And David's being victorious in a big way. I think you'd have to agree. Now, to help us understand this even further now, this war and what David is doing, let's look at 2 Samuel 4. 2 Samuel 4. Verse 8. 2 Samuel 4 and verse 8. "And they brought the head of Ishbosheth, Remember, he's already, we already just read he's killed three of his other sons, right? Or here's another son. All right, they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David the Hebron, and said to the king, "Behold, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life, and the Lord hath avenged my Lord the king this day of Saul and his seed." Now, I want you to notice real closely the very end of that verse. Okay, the very end of the verse. He says, "Avenge my Lord this day, and so and of what?" What's it say? Of his what? Seed, right? All right. Very important point. Now, we have a hard time understanding this sometimes, but what is that telling us? Well, in the wild kingdom, let's take example of a pride of lions. A pride was a male and his ladies. Just a pride. Now, when this male lion gets older, a young male comes in and challenges him. And if when he whips him, this does happen, we all get old, don't we? When he whips this male, the first thing that male lion does, he kills all the male cubs. Kills every one of them. What's he doing? His seed, right? He doesn't want any of that. He's the big kahuna now, and it's going to be my children, not somebody else's children. So what are we reading here? When it says in this verse 8, this day of Saul and his seed, it's very important to remember that for our study today. Okay? All right. Now, you stay right at that opening. If you look at chapter 5 and verse 4, that's 2 Samuel 5 and verse 4, David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 40 years. All right. So now we have a situation where David's on the throne. He's a ruler. And we want to look at an example of something that happened during his kingdom. Very interesting thing and application for us today. Okay. Let's go to 2 Samuel 4 and verse 4. Same opening. 2 Samuel 4 and verse 4. "And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son." Wait a minute now. Let's stop. Think of it. Jonathan's son, Saul's son, that means it's Saul's grandson, right? You with me? Okay. We're talking about Saul's grandson. That would be his seed. All right. Keep that in mind. He said in verse 4, "A son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled." Well, let's stop right there just a moment. When the tidings, what tidings? Well, that's the news of what? Jonathan's been killed. Saul's been killed. These tidings, meaning the news has come to her, so it's a panic. Why is she panicking? Who is she looking after? Grandson of Saul, right? Jonathan's son. So, of course, panic sets in. I want to try to get this across, because you may look at this verse and not look at this background and say, what's she in such a big hurry about? Well, let's look what could happen here. Middle of that verse, "And Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled, and it came to pass as she made haste to flee, that what?" He said, I can just see her picking this 5-year-old up. She's got this horrible news, and she takes off like in a run. And what happened? Well, they fell, and the grandson, he got hurt. His name is Mephibosheth. You look at this verse, it says the last part of verse 4, that he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Now, no orthopedic surgery, it was a bad fall. And evidently something in his legs were broken, And it was a bad situation, and he was lame. Okay. Now think about that. We looked at first, we looked at second time, we've seen 2 Samuel 4:8 about the seed. I want you to keep that in your mind. And we also have seen about the sons being killed, that David is trying to kill, to wipe out that seed. And he's doing a really good job in the sense of being good in that he is really eliminated that seed, except for what? Except for one. All right. Now think for just a moment. Suppose you're that grandson. You're Mephibosheth. You're lame. You probably can't move around a lot. You can't move fast. And don't know what extent, but it was pretty bad. So what do you think for the next 10, 15 years? You think he's doing this when the door knocks? Do you think he's making himself real visible in public? No. He's afraid. There's a lot of fear. He's living with an anxiety. And I could see him just looking over his back constantly. Worried. All right. Keep that in mind. Now, I'm saying it's about 50. I'm just estimating 10 to 15 years. I don't have a scripture, but it's in that ballpark. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. Now, 1 Samuel, please, 18:3. 1 Samuel 18:3. This is going to help us understand what David is about to say, okay? Let's look at 1 Samuel 18:3. You there? All right. Then Jonathan and David were made a what? Made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. We know from our studies in the Bible how close these men were, right? Jonathan and David, they were just bosom buddies. They were just friends. You know, you can have a friend closer than a brother. That's the kind of friendship they had. Extremely close friends. Really loved each other. All right. Now, let's go to 2 Samuel 9. 2 Samuel 9. I think I've calmed down enough to get you the right verses now. 2 Samuel 9, we look at verses 1 through 5. Okay? 2 Samuel 9, 1 through 5. Very interesting. And David said, is there yet any that is left in the house of Saul? Let's stop there. Just stop at the comma for just a minute. And the king says, I wonder, is there anybody else left of that seed? Now, 10 years previous, what was he doing to that seed? To attain the kingship, he had to wipe that out. And he did a good job at that. We got one left. And he says, I wonder, is it possible that somebody else of the seed of Saul still exists? Well, what would you think? Well, before the comma in this verse, what would you think he's thinking? Hey, if there is, let's wipe them out. No. We're going to get shocked here, but this is what love can do. Continuing that verse, he said, anyone that is left in the house that I may show him kindness for what? For Jonathan's sake. Now his things have settled down. He's got the kingship. He's fully in charge. And maybe he has a time to reflect a little bit on some things he's done in the past. And he got time to think about that covenant with Jonathan. So I wonder, is it possible that somebody is out there that I could show kindness to? Is that quite a change? Paradigm change, isn't it? Yes, it is. And there was a house of Saul, a servant whose name was Ziba. Verse 2. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, art thou Ziba? And he said, thy servant is he. And look at verse 3. The king said, is there any not yet in the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto the king, Jonathan have yet a son which is lame on his feet. Yeah. Well, Ziba's going to tell the truth, isn't he? Well, sure he is. We'll find out in just a few minutes. He's a servant in the house of Saul. But he's not of the seed. You see, he was a servant. We've got to be sure you understand that when we read this text. There's a lot of difference between the servant of Saul and being the seed of Saul. Okay? Ziba was a servant. And the king said unto him, where is he? You know, can't you see the vibrations going through the kingdom? What's David going to do? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he's in the house of Machir, the son of Ammiel, in Lodabar. Now that's a little suburb of the city, okay? A little community. That's probably where he hid himself. He's not in the main flow of Walmart traffic. He's over somewhere in the suburbs. He's hiding. He's lame and he's worried. He's looking over his shoulder. Then King David sent and fetched him out of the house of Machir the son of Ammiel from Lodabar. Now think just a moment. Now you're a Mephibosheth. You're Mephibosheth. Now you haven't been wanting to hear any knocks on the door for the last maybe 10 or 12, 15 years, have you? Do you want to hear a knock on the door? No. And now he gets a knock on the door. Can you imagine? All these years, he'd been worried, scared to death, and now we get... Now they didn't send him an invitation. The king didn't send him a little invitation note. So if you get a chance, come on over. What did he do? He fetched him. Physically took him in and said, look, come with us. Now then Mephibosheth, verse 6, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was coming to David. He fell on his face and did reverence. Now, put yourself in Mephibosheth's place. Would you do that? Oh, yes, you would. Hey, you show what? Humility. Allegiance. Hey, I'm at your service. I'm your servant. I'll do what you want. Fell right down on his face in front of the king, showing total homage, submission. And he said, behold thy servant. He's laying, he's on his, he's down, he fell down in front of the king. He said, I am your servant. In other words, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. Verse 7. And David said unto him, what'd he say? Hey, don't be afraid. Mephibosheth, don't be afraid. You remember? He told Paul at least twice that I can remember. Maybe more. I know it was at least two. Once at Corinth and once at sea in the storm. You and I studied it. He said, fear not. Okay. Don't be afraid. Here's King David said, it's okay, Mephibosheth. You don't have to be afraid. I will show thee kindness for Jonathan. What? Thy father's sake. Now, that covenant, right? He remembered that covenant. And because of your dad, I tell you what I'm going to do. Look at what he does for Mephibosheth. And we'll restore, verse 7, and we'll restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table when? Continually. Wow. You talking about a privilege. This wasn't done. I mean, you did. King David didn't in the king's table. Wow. Now, you're going to be there from now on a permanent basis. Can you imagine? Can you imagine with Mephibosheth right now? Can you see? Can you get a little idea of how he felt? Wow. Now, I've been looking over my shoulder all this time. And look what he's going to do for me. Do you think he kind of put him completely at ease? All those years looking over his shoulder kind of came to an end, didn't they? In a wonderful way. Verse 8, he bowed himself and said, what is thy servant that thou should look upon me such as a dead dog as I am? I am nothing. I am nothing compared to you as a king. Why would you even bother to look at me? Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant. Now this is, be sure you keep this in mind. Verse 9, the king called Ziba. Whose servant is he? Saul's servant. Now, and it's very important to understand the difference now. I tried to point it out earlier. But being Saul's servant, different, entirely different from being his seed. David recognizes he's a servant. He's done a good job, evidently. He doesn't have a problem with him being a member of the previous regime. No problem there. Ziba's all right. He's been doing a good job, evidently. Because he saw in verse 9 and said to him, I have given thee thy master's son all that has pertained to Saul and to all his house. So he said, I've given to thy master. Who was his master? His master was Saul. And Jonathan bore his master. I've given him all that pertained to his house. Verse 10. Now thou therefore and thy sons and thy servants shall till the land for him. Wow. What's he saying? Ziba, you and your servants that used to serve Saul are going to till the land for who? For Jonathan's son. Okay, let's look what else they're going to do. And thou shalt bring in the fruits, and thy master's son may have food to eat. But you're going to till the land, you're going to bring the crops in for this man. But what? Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread all the way at whose table? My table. You're going to furnish him, you're going to supply him. But now he's really going to need it, but you're going to serve him, but he's going to be eating at my table. Now Ziba had, look at the workforce now that King David has put. See, John and Mark would like to have this kind of help, you see, on the farm. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. That's a pretty good workforce, isn't it? You want to till the land? You want to cut some hay? You want to harvest some corn? Wow, man, that looks like to me 35 hands have just been turned over to Mephibosheth. These guys are going to be working for you. Now, verse 11, when Ziba went unto the king, according to all my lord, the king has commanded his servant, and so shall thy servant do. What's he saying? Hey, I'm your servant, and I'm going to do exactly what you said. As for Mephibosheth, said to the king, he shall eat at my table as what? As one of the king's sons. See, he couldn't have done anything greater, could he? What happened? David was killing, wasn't he? I used this example in a lesson a while back. I don't know whether I did it here or not, but I think it fits here because King David had a change of paradigm. Major, big time. Let me give you this example. There's a man on the subway in New York City. Every Sunday morning, he got on the subway because there's not many people on Sunday. You know, the subway's kind of empty. And a big thing in his life was reading the Sunday paper. And I used to deliver the Sunday paper back in the old days, and I remember how big they were. And I saw people come out in their pajamas to get the paper. Didn't come to church, but they got that paper. It was a religion. Reading that paper, okay. So this man was on the subway with his Sunday paper every Sunday morning, and he sat there in the subway and read the paper. He's been doing it for years. Sunday morning ritual, that was his routine. He was sitting there one Sunday morning reading his paper, and they stopped, and a man came in with the three children. Kind of smaller children. And they sat down not far from the guy reading the paper. And they were just screaming and yelling and running back and forth up the subway. And you know those poles they've got that when it gets crowded, you stand up and you hold. They were climbing up and down the poles. I mean, just really make it a racket. And so the guy reading his paper finally said, "Well, look, excuse me, sir." He said, "Could you get your children under control?" He said, "I'm having a trouble time reading my paper." And the man got up, said, "Look," he walked over where he could hear him. He said, "I'm sorry." He said, "We just came from the hospital. Their mother just died. And I guess this is the way these children are handling the death of the mother." And this guy said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He threw the paper down. He said, "I'm sorry that we've interrupted you reading your paper." He said, "I can read that paper anytime." He said, "Is there anything I can do for you? Can I help you in some way?" Did his paradigm change? Right. Paradigm of David changed. Now, what do we do? What do we see when we look at our back spiritually? Let's look at one other example. This guy's got a question. I think it's a remarkable thing. All of this was based on love. And didn't Jesus do something for us based on love? Hadn't God done something to us for us based on love? Okay. And of course, I think you probably know where I'm going with this. You and I, spiritually, maybe not every, I don't mean in an anxious way like Mephibosheth, no, but you and I spiritually are looking over our shoulder. Because why? We know, don't we? We know Hebrews 9:27. We know it's appointed unto man once to die. We know, right, that we're going to have to face that judgment. So in a manner of speaking, we're kind of, you know, we need to think about that, don't we? Yeah. So we'll be ready. We're looking over our shoulders spiritually. Let's look at Esther for just a minute. Turn to Esther chapter 4. Esther chapter 4. Hello, Rudy. How you doing? Glad you're here. Esther 4:11. Esther 4:11. "And the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know, whosoever, whether a man or woman, shall come into the king in the inner court, who is not called, there is one law to his put him to death, except to whom the king shall hold out his golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days." Esther's got a problem. She loves her Jewish brethren. She knows that there's a conspiracy to kill all those Jews. And Mordecai gives her some advice. "Okay, I know you're worried about this, Esther, but you can help." Look what he says. Verse 13. "Then Mordecai commanded to Esther to answer, 'Think not with self that thou shalt escape the king's house more than all the Jews,'" right? 14. "For if thou altogether hold thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come into the kingdom for such a time as this?" So Esther's going to go in, friends, and she's going to be looking over her shoulder. I'm going to tell you that right now. She's going to be looking over her shoulder. Let's look and see. Verse 16, go gather together all the Jews that are present in the Shushan and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days and three nights. What's he asking for? Prayer. Hey, I'm going to do this, but boy, I am going to be looking over my shoulder. I'm going to be taking a chance. And she said, also my maidens will fast likewise, and so I will go unto the king, and which is not according to the law. Remember, we just read the law. You've got to be invited. Okay. And if I perish, I pray. Oh, I'm going to go in. If I die, guess what? I die. Now, in chapter 5, verse 1, she put on her royal apparel, reading on in the verse, and stood in the inner court of the king's house and over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house and over against the gate of the house. Now, here's Esther. All my Jews are going to, the conspiracy here is kill all my brethren. And I know I've got a really good chance of being killed here. A really good chance. Now, she's walking into the throne room. Do you think she's looking over her shoulder? Yeah, she's looking everywhere. Because why? He could just say, that's it. And she knew it. So I can guarantee you, she's looking for anything, any person would be close to her. What is she doing? Oh, yeah, she's looking over her shoulder. Looking over her shoulder. Verse 2 of chapter 5, and so it was. It was so when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. What is that? Love at first sight? Like when I saw Jackie the first time. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. And verse 3, and when the king and said the king unto her, what wilt the queen Esther, what is thy request? And it shall be given thee, what? Not only will I give you your request, but up to half of my kingdom, it is yours, ma'am. If that's not love at first sight, I've never heard about it. Okay, ladies, you can relate to that. All right. What about you and I? I mentioned it briefly a few minutes ago, but the point here, of course, is to help us recognize you and I need to be looking over our shoulder, but not in the sense we read, a man, someone fit is not fit for the king. You put your hands to the plow and what? Look back. That means in terms of faithfulness. So you and I don't need to look back. Paul talks about, I don't have time for all the scriptures, but you know the scripture. He says, I've got to look forward. That's what he's talking about. You and I spiritually need to be thinking about what's coming, but physically and spiritually we need to serve God without doing what? Without looking back over our shoulder, right? That's the way we got to serve God. 100% for Him and not against Him in any way, shape, or form. Anybody got a question? Just turn to we have a couple of minutes. Turn to Luke 9:62, please. Luke 9:62. 9:62, I referenced it, but I want to give it to you so you can read it in case you want to write it down. You probably haven't memorized, but Luke 9:62, and Jesus said unto him, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Now, let's turn to Philippians chapter 3, please. Philippians chapter 3, and let's look at verses 13 through 14. Philippians 3, 13 through 14, as we finish up our class. Philippians 3, 13 through 14. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press forward to the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Okay? You see the difference now between looking back and charging forward. Okay. That's what God wants us to do. He wants us to put Him first, to count on Him, and not be doubting in any way. So I hope these two examples will help us to see this better. One other thing now, Philippians 4, verse 11. Philippians 4 and verse 11. Not to speak, I think I'll read 11 and 12. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am in, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, I know how to be abound, and everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full, to be hungry, and to abound and to suffer need. Now I used to kid with some friends of mine when in verse 11 when it says, I have learned in whatever state, I said, that includes West Virginia. I say that joking because we've got some really good friends in West Virginia, and we had a wonderful 3.5 years there, but I used to kid with them a little bit about that. Okay? Well, thank you for your kind attention. The lesson is yours. Thank you.